Today is Monday, August 16th, and you are listening to International Edition on the Voice of America. I am Chinedu Ofor, broadcasting from Washington, D.C. Coming up, Taliban tightens control in Kabul.
There is still uncertainty and confusion in Kabul about how this formal transfer of power to Taliban will take place.
Plus, aid workers vow to continue work in Afghanistan.
We are aiming to be able to stay and deliver the assistance that is really critical right now.
Also, Poland sells COVID vaccines to Australia. Our top story today is in Afghanistan. More than 60 countries issued a joint statement late Sunday saying Afghans and international citizens who want to leave the country must be allowed to depart, and added airports and border crossings must remain open. The U.S. government and countries, including Australia, Canada, France, Germany, Italy, Japan, Republic of Korea, Qatar, and the United Kingdom, said in a joint statement that, quote, those in positions of power and authority across Afghanistan bear responsibility and accountability for the protection of human life and property and for the immediate restoration of security and civil order, unquote. The Pentagon authorized an additional 1,000 troops to help with evacuation from Kabul, bringing the total number of U.S. troops expected in Afghanistan temporarily to 6,000. A joint statement from the U.S. Department of Defense and the Department of State, published later on Sunday, outlined some of the details of the troop movement, saying the mission will, quote, enable the safe departure of U.S. and allied personnel from Afghanistan, unquote, and will include, quote, taking over air traffic control, unquote. The Taliban has tightened its control of the Afghan capital after its swift takeover, with reports of normalcy returning to the streets and government offices. Armed fighters are patrolling the streets and guarding public offices. For more, I spoke with VOA's Ayaz Gul in Islamabad.
There is still uncertainty and confusion in Kabul about how this formal transfer of power to Taliban will take place a day after they captured capital Kabul and bringing almost entire Afghanistan under their control. The Taliban fighters on the streets of the Afghan capital are trying to maintain law and order. There have been incidents of violence, but it seems that most of the city now is under control. And what we have seen, footages from Kabul, that things are back to normal, businesses as usual. But still, people, residents, when I have spoken to few of them, are really uncertain about the future course of action. But definitely the scenes that we have seen out of Kabul airport, you know, thousands of Afghans swamped this international airport in Kabul and trying to get on one of the evacuation flights that the United States and other Western countries are operating to pull out U.S. diplomats from other Western countries. But ordinary Afghans have also reached airport in thousands and trying to hang on to even U.S. aircraft taking off from the runway. And unfortunately, there have been two incidents in which five of the passengers, even when after the plane took off, they were stuck to the plane and nearly like 1,000 feet above the ground, then they started falling, and we don't know about their fate.
There are reports of refugees fleeing from Afghanistan. What is happening at the border areas from where you are?
We know that hundreds and in fact thousands of people have fled into Uzbekistan, which is bordered with northern Afghan provinces, and also some to Iran. But there have been no refugee influx toward Pakistan, because Pakistan has effectively sealed its border and is not allowing any refugee, because authorities here have already been complaining to the international community that Pakistan is already hosting nearly 3 million Afghan refugees and that they need to be repatriated. And the current economic crisis that Pakistan has been facing does not allow, according to authorities, the country to host further refugees. So we don't see any influx in this direction.
The Taliban speaks of a transitional government. Do you know what that means? Is it an all-Taliban government, or they want to incorporate some other members of the society or some other people from the previous government?
I have spoken to Taliban officials, and they, as of this moment, they are determined to have a direct transfer of power to them. And then they say once they have control in their hands, they will engage all the segments of the Afghan society from all ethnic groups to have sort of an inclusive setup, according to them, in place so that they can tell the world that it is a government acceptable to all Afghans. I mean, this is what they are trying to project as their plan for the future governance system. But what we know is that there are preparations underway that Afghan politicians and leaders are planning to go to Doha, where the Taliban maintain their political office. And it is expected that the direct power transfer to Taliban leaders will take place in the Qatari capital of Doha. I mean, this is what we know from directly Taliban sources. When that thing happens and how it happens, whether it will happen in Doha, these are the questions that we have not received answers from them.
That's VOA's Ayaz Gul speaking with me from Islamabad. For an update on the U.S. military efforts to evacuate Americans, foreign diplomats, and Afghans who aided the U.S. in the war, I spoke with VOA Pentagon correspondent Carla Bob.
Defense official, I asked him how many C-17s the military is using to evacuate, and he said, quote, everyone that's available. They were having some problems this morning getting onto the airfield at Hamid Karzai's International Airport. They were having some trouble because there were so many people on the airfield. They were able to clear the civilians off the airfield, and the troops that were waiting to arrive have arrived now. But that's, I mean, that's just one of the many logistical problems that you have with such an abrupt pullout that you're going through right now. We're looking at about 6,000 American troops that have been approved to be in Afghanistan. There were already 1,000 there. There were 3,000 that were ordered there within the last week, and I've been told that the majority of them are already there. Bulk came in this morning too, and then there will be 2,000 more that were ordered over the weekend that are going to be heading that way as well. So a lot of manpower, a lot of military equipment being used to get these people out, but yes, there's still an evacuation ongoing.
There were reports of gunfire in and around the airport. How safe and how secure is the airport at the moment?
Well, I am being told that it is a chaotic situation, but it is secure, and it is secure by American troops. In fact, General McKenzie, he is the head of U.S. Central Command. A senior defense official just told me that he is in Qatar right now. He met with the Taliban on Sunday, and he warned them that the U.S. would use self-defense tactics to defend the airport should they try to interfere with this evacuation procedure. I have not been told that there has been any interference at this point, but we'll have to keep watching the situation as it continues to unfold.
There are reports that really desperate Afghans are trying to get on any of the available flights. Is this just Americans being evacuated or anyone who is at the airport?
No, this is not just Americans that are being evacuated. There have been reports, I have not confirmed this, there have been reports that Americans are being prioritized, but the plan is to evacuate Americans and Afghan locals that were working at the embassy and with Americans, and these SIV applicants, these special immigration visa applicants that have gone through and already made it through the security check that they have in place. And that does not mean that they've made it through all the steps, all the hurdles that they have to go through, that if they've made that through that initial, I know they're being evacuated now as well. So lots of people coming out of Afghanistan. We should see more and more in the next few days.
That's VOA Pentagon correspondent Carla Bob speaking with me in Washington. Aid workers in Afghanistan vowed to continue support for civilians, but acknowledge the situation looks grim for most of the vulnerable, including children. Women in particular fear a return to the harsh treatment that they endured when the Taliban controlled the country in the 1990s. VOA's Arash Arabasadi has more.
Shuttered storefronts Sunday in Kabul as the Taliban's campaign across Afghanistan reached the capital. Violence pushed civilians from their homes. Most of them are women and children. Five fleeing families found refuge in this small house. Among them are three widows and many orphans with nowhere else to go and for whom school is no longer an option. Displaced widow Guldasta says she lost her husband and three sons to the fighting. She tells VOA her grandchildren now provide for the family as trash collectors in Kabul.
Look at these little kids. They're collecting paper and plastic from garbage. Is this work for little kids? What did Ashraf Ghani do for us? What did Karzai do? What did Taliban do for us? They widowed our girls. We've been here for months. No cooking, no meat, no good clothes or shoes. They're still trying to get medicine.
With the Taliban bulldozing through Afghan security forces, those bringing humanitarian aid face tough choices.
We are aiming to be able to stay and deliver the assistance that is really critical right now, but also have contingency plans for if the situation continues to deteriorate, how we keep our staff, both national and internationals like myself, safe.
As Taliban fighters are set to take control of Afghanistan, human rights workers worry most about Afghan girls who, under Taliban rule, were not allowed to go to school, and women who could not go out in public without a full body covering and male escort.
The Taliban still have same attitude, same behavior, same philosophy for their own self, like that they have their own war. And it's really not possible, or it is difficult for all people of Afghanistan, I'm sure, and particularly for women and the youth.
A displaced man identifying himself as M. Omar tells VOA his family just wants a normal life.
Taliban, you have mothers and sisters like us. The government, too. You have families and mothers and sisters. For God's sake, stop the fighting. For the sake of the Holy Book, stop the fighting. If there is no war, we can go home and work to provide for our families. We left everything behind.
These displaced Afghans say the Taliban set landmines around the homes they fled. They say their children lost limbs. Arash Arabasadi, VOA News.
United Nations agencies say they intend to stay in Afghanistan to provide aid to millions of Afghans. Lisa Schlein reports for VOA from Geneva.
United Nations agencies are pledging to remain in Afghanistan as urban areas, especially the capital, Kabul, are overflowing with people who have fled Taliban offensives in rural parts of the country. Jens Laerke, spokesman for the UN Office for the Coordination of Humanitarian Affairs, says the UN has been in Afghanistan uninterrupted for the last 70 years and is still there. He says the UN is concerned about the safety of its international and national staff and is closely monitoring events to ensure they are protected.
Of course, it is a very volatile, fluid, rapidly changing situation. But we are staying where we are. We have all intentions to stay and deliver for the Afghan people. The deal that we have in Afghanistan is with the Afghan people, with the civilians. And we are there to stay and help them.
The United Nations has 720 staff assigned to Afghanistan. About 300 UN staff members are on the ground in the country. The rest are working remotely because of the COVID-19 pandemic. OCHA coordinates much of the humanitarian assistance that has been provided by 156 UN and non-governmental agencies to 8 million Afghans this year. Laerke says there's been a surge of displacement since May. This coincides with the accelerated withdrawal of U.S. and NATO troops from Afghanistan. Before the exodus began, he says 21,000 displaced people were recorded in Kabul. Now, he says, thousands more people are rushing into the capital. He says most have no place to sleep and the delivery of aid is becoming more difficult. He says missions are being conducted to assess the needs.
As humanitarians, we will engage with anyone, including the Taliban, if it pertains to accessing people in need. And if that is based fully and firmly on the core humanitarian principles of complete neutrality, impartiality, and independence of delivery.
The UN Refugee Agency, one of the agencies working in Afghanistan, has assessed the needs of nearly 400,000 people who have become newly uprooted this year. The agency is providing food, shelter, hygiene, and other aid. The World Food Program reports it is increasing food assistance programs to reach 9 million acutely hungry people through December. The World Health Organization reports violence-induced trauma is a major public health concern. Consequently, it says it is supporting trauma care in 130 facilities. It says it also is supporting blood banks and training health workers on mass casualty management. Lisa Schlein for VOA News, Geneva.
This is the Voice of America. A young Chinese woman says she was held for 8 days at a Chinese-run secret detention facility in Dubai, along with at least 2 Uyghurs. While so-called, quote, black sites, unquote, are common in China, the account for 26-year-old Wu Huan is the only testimony known to experts that Beijing has set up in another country. Such a site would reflect how China is increasingly using its international clout to detain or bring back citizens it wants from overseas. Prime Minister Justin Trudeau has triggered an election amid a new wave of COVID as he seeks to capitalize on Canada being one of the most fully vaccinated countries in the world. Trudeau is seeking to win a majority of seats in Parliament. His Liberal Party fell short of that 2 years ago and must rely on the opposition to pass legislation.
This is Science in a Minute.
An international group of scientists led by American and Canadian researchers have written a unique study that provides a detailed look at the entire life of a 17,000-year-old Arctic woolly mammoth. The researchers say in a press release that they produced and examined isotopic information from the mammoth's tusk in a fossil provided by the University of Alaska Museum of the North. Isotopes are chemical elements whose atomic structure had been modified in some way from their native configuration. The researchers say they were able to use this data to match the mammoth's movements and diet with isotopic maps of their home region. While the scientists don't know if the mammoth migrated with the season, they were able to ascertain that it traveled a distance equal to circling the Earth twice. Their findings are detailed in the journal Science. I'm VOA's Rick Pantaleo.
You are listening to International Edition on the Voice of America. I am Chinedu Ofor, broadcasting from Washington, D.C. The death toll from a devastating earthquake in Haiti rose to at least 1,297 on Sunday, as neighboring countries rushed to send aid and rescuers scrambled to find survivors buried beneath the rubble before a tropical storm hits. Gloria So of Reuters reports.
The death toll from a devastating earthquake in Haiti climbed to nearly 1,300 on Sunday as rescuers scrambled to find survivors in the rubble. Hospitals have been stretched to capacity with some 5,700 more people injured. Thousands of homes and businesses have been destroyed. The 7.2 magnitude earthquake dealt a massive blow to the impoverished nation, still reeling from the assassination of its president, Jovenel Moïse, last month, and facing a severe economic downturn compounded by the pandemic. Southwestern Haiti suffered the most extensive damage, especially the region in and around the seafront town of Lake Haye. Nearby countries have rushed to send desperately needed aid, including Mexico and the Dominican Republic. The U.S. also dispatched a 65-member search and rescue team. A breakdown of law and order cut off access to key roads in the worst hit areas, leaving parts of the island nation in the hands of gangs. Thousands of Haitians spent the weekend sleeping out in the open, despite the looming risk of heavy rains and warnings from local officials about the spread of waterborne diseases. Rescue efforts will be hampered by Tropical Storm Grace, expected to hit Haiti as early as Monday.
That's Gloria So of Reuters. Poland is selling 1 million doses of the Pfizer vaccine to boost Australia's comparatively low COVID-19 inoculation rates. From Sydney, Phil Mercer reports.
Reports have said Poland has been trying to sell on at least 4 million spare doses from its national stockpile. The deal is part of Canberra's international hunt for extra doses to boost its vaccination rollout. With only about a quarter of its population fully inoculated, Australia has lagged behind many other countries. Half of the doses from Poland will go to 20 to 39-year-olds in the worst virus-hit suburbs in Sydney, where Australia's harshest lockdown got even stricter on Monday, with new regulations that limit the movement of millions of people. Many residents in areas with large numbers of Delta variant infections are not allowed to move more than 5 kilometres from their homes, as law enforcement agencies assumes some of the most sweeping powers the country has ever seen. Almost 18,000 police officers and 1,800 soldiers are patrolling Sydney's streets to enforce the lockdown. Health authorities in New South Wales Monday reported 478 new COVID-19 cases, a new daily record, and seven more fatalities. Australian Prime Minister Scott Morrison is urging people to obey the public health orders.
We've been seeing those case numbers rise in Sydney and New South Wales each day, and that is terribly concerning. So together, we've got to get those numbers coming down. And there are two things we can do. I need you to stay at home, and you needed more vaccines from us. More vaccines are on their way. They'll be there this week.
In Victoria, officials Monday extended a lockdown in Melbourne until at least September 2, as Delta variant infections increase. A nighttime curfew will be imposed from 9 p.m. until 5 a.m. Lockdowns are also in place in the Australian Capital Territory, the region surrounding Canberra, and the Northern Territory. Travel into and out of Australia remains heavily restricted. Most foreign nationals were banned from entering in March 2020 to curb the spread of the virus. The policy continues to separate many families. Daniela May, a German-Australian woman, has written a song about not seeing her extended family overseas.
In different time zones we sit, and the uncertainty we breathe, we watch our loved ones freeze.
About 39,000 coronavirus cases have been reported in Australia since the pandemic began, and 958 people have died, according to the health department. Phil Mercer for VOA News, Sydney.
Australia's biggest city of Sydney recorded its deadliest day of the COVID-19 pandemic on Monday, while residents in Melbourne faced a nightly curfew and a further 2 weeks of lockdown amid a surge in infections. Brian Wood of Reuters reports.
200 troops were deployed across Australia's biggest city, Sydney, on Monday to enforce the city's eighth week of a COVID-19 lockdown. It comes as the city records its largest one-day rise in COVID-19 cases since the pandemic began. That's according to New South Wales Chief Health Officer, Dr. Kerry Chant.
Disturbingly, we saw 478 locally acquired cases of COVID to the 24 hours to 8 p.m. last night. Too many people are infectious in the community, and it is critical that we all heed and take part in the actions we're required to undertake.
New South Wales State Premier Gladys Berejiklian confirmed seven people in Sydney died from COVID in the last 24 hours, including a 15-year-old boy who also had pneumococcal meningitis. She warned Australians of the long road still ahead.
It's a horrible situation. We need to turn that around. But can I make this point? To suggest that we're going to have zero the whole way through until the pandemic ends across the world is, I don't think, a realistic proposition.
Australia is now vulnerable to the highly infectious Delta variant, with only 26% of its adults fully vaccinated. The national capital, Canberra, along with Melbourne and Darwin, saw alarming daily case rises on Monday and will remain under lockdown for at least another 2 weeks.
That's Brian Wood of Reuters. Air raid sirens have sounded in southern Israel after a rocket was fired from the Gaza Strip. The Israeli ministry said Monday that one rocket launch that was intercepted by aerial defense. That comes at a tense time after Palestinian health officials said four Palestinians were killed in a shootout with Israel troops in the West Bank. The Israeli border police said troops involved in the arrest of a suspect, quote, came under heavy fire from close range, unquote, by gunmen, and Israeli soldiers returned fire. No officers were injured, it said. The Palestinian news agency Wafa said four men were killed by Israeli fire and a fifth was seriously wounded. That's it for our show today. For more in-depth and breaking news 24 hours a day, please visit voanews.com. On behalf of our producer Nadia Taha and our managing editor Kate Pound-Dawson, I am Chinua Duafo in Washington. Thank you so much for listening and have a great evening.
On the next Straight Talk Africa, we will celebrate the records, the medals, and the victories of Africa's greatest athletes at the Tokyo Olympics. We'll also look at what it would take to bring the Summer Olympics to Africa. We'll examine what kind of investment would be needed and whether Africans really want to host the Games. Join me, Haydee Adams, on the next Straight Talk Africa, this Wednesday.